Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm thrilled because I'm in San Francisco at the station KQED. The Hungarian writer László Krasznahorkai is here. The occasion is the publication of his novel, Satan Tango. He is one of the great European voices which the publisher New Directions has been making available to us. This is the third of his novels to be published by New Directions. With me is Jim Crusoe, the novelist whose most recent book is Parsifal. It's published by Tin House. And you may have been listening last week when Jim named our guest, László Krasznahorkai, as his favorite living novelist. And I thought it would be wonderful to have Jim join us in interviewing Krasznahorkai today. I'm going to ask you to begin, Jim.
Well, it's true. You are my favorite living novelist, so I thank you. And I've been reading you for a while. So here's one of my questions, my first question at least, is if I were to describe one of the things I like best about your work, is this combination of, I suppose, absolute hopelessness and the fact that the world in a certain way, as you see it, is also very funny. At least there's something very funny about the hopelessness, which of course reminds me of Samuel Beckett. And at the same time, your world and Beckett's worlds are very different in texture. And I wonder if you might sort of differentiate how you feel you're different than Beckett. That's simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you very much for your wonderful words. I think there is a big difference, of course, between Beckett's and my books, because I haven't problem actually with the language, and Beckett had it. I had problem with the life, with the facts of the human beings. And you mentioned the word hopeless, hopelessness and funny. You know, there's a level of the hopelessness which is very funny. And, you know, if you lost your right arm, this is tragic. If you lost your left arm, this is also very tragic. If you lost your right leg, it is absolute tragic. But if you lost your left leg, it is comic. This is the point where I should laugh. You know, and this is a little bit similar with Beckett. You know, this border, this very sensitive border, and after this border, you cannot do anything only to laugh.
Although there are some people who feel that Waiting for Godot is a political play, that it represents the movements of the resistance, never knowing who they will meet. But by and large, Beckett does not seem to me to be a political writer. When I was reading Satan Tango, the world seems to be the world of the failure of collectivism in Hungary. Am I right in thinking that there's a more time-based political dimension to this book?
It depends on when we're talking about. if we would be in the middle 80s, I answered that no, this book hasn't political meaning, political background. I wanted to write a book about the human condition, the condition humaine, not about the political situation in Hungary. That time, in the late 70s, early 80s, we lived a life in the communist Hungary, which looked like a system for eternity, not a political system, but system for life. You know, we believed that this system is forever, and every day is the same. If we talking about now, about this book, of course, the Satan Tango, the novel, has some political background. Without this communist system, without the late Kadarist system, people cannot understand really this book. Although the characters, the story of this book, the status of this human being in this book were absolute not a part of a political meaning, a political story. It was enough, actually, that time, in the middle of 80s, a good, a beautiful sentence that you became really political writer. A beautiful sentence was provocative against the system. A beautiful thinking was absolutely provocative, but it was impossible to prohibit it. How do you think and how do you write? From the other side, of course, that was a little bit problematic, of course, the publishing of this book in the middle of 80s, because in the middle of 80s nobody had a guess that they have only 4 years. Nobody believed that. Me too. Actually, until today, I haven't idea why was it possible to publish this book. When we wanted to make a film with my friend Bill Attar from this book, that was absolute prohibited, the film. The novel, not.
Tell me, why was the film regarded with suspicion when the book was not?
Because the movie was made after the collapse of the communism. And, of course, in the so-called free Hungarian country, it was possible to make every kind of movie. That was difficult, but not because of political reason, but because of financial reason. And we saw at the beginning with Béla that this film will be a little bit longer than usual.
Yes, I saw it very recently. It's a 7.5-hour film, and as with the films of Béla Tarr, the slowness, the gradualness, the darkness, the dimness are necessary to the film. It imposes a rhythm of perception that is mesmerizing and unforgettable.
To go back to those sentences, just for a minute, I love the idea of sentences being subversive. And I'm wondering, to some degree, your sentences are long, and they're consistently long, but I'm wondering if to some degree that was about shutting out the world, the reason for their length, and in a sense, sustaining a vision as opposed to interpenetrating a vision. And I wonder if you I don't even know if this is a possible question to talk about. If you could talk about what you imagine the effect of those sentences on your readers might be.
I've never thought of my readers. I love very much my readers after the book, mm-hmm. but before, I haven't idea about my readers. And I think so, the readers are in the same situation. If somebody reads a book, he or she is absolutely alone. If he or she reads really a book, not with enthusiastic, with patience, but if somebody really in the depth of a novel, of a literary work, he or she is absolutely alone. And this is also my case when I write a book. And so after a book, this is a fantastic meeting with readers, because so many lonely people can meet after a book, after a movie. It's wonderful.
Is it your attempt to render a philosophical relation to the visible, you know, to find a way to withdraw from the world through prose?
Yeah, perhaps my answer will be a little bit different what you wait, but with these books, I was trying, and I'm trying always to find a way out. The main important, the most important word for me, in English two words, the way out. But I was never success to show a way out with my book. Unfortunately, I closed very much my readers in my books instead of to open a space for them. And that's why I try again to write a new book, because I really want to make a space, to make an open space for the readers. I don't hate my readers.
No, know? No, I wouldn't and, think so.
Absolutely, in opposite. I love my readers, and I want to help them. But how? This is also a question in my books. How? And actually, this desire in me has a consequence, you know, and the consequence is the sentence. To write beautiful, like
I would sort of argue in the sense that I think that your sentences are a gift to the readers, and I think the great thing about a long sentence such as yours is they unscroll a world that wasn't there before the beginning of that sentence,
yeah.
And every sentence does that, so that the reader by the end of it is surprised. They've been given much more than they expected.
I'm talking with Laszlo Krasznahorkai. The occasion is the publication in English of Satan Tango, which was in fact Krasznahorkai's first novel. It is the third to be translated into English. We're talking with Jim Crusoe, who introduced me to the work of Laszlo Krasznahorkai. Jim's book was the most recent book for the KCRW Angels Book Club. It's called Parsifal, and it's an honor to be here in San Francisco. Now, part of what interests me, it hasn't been brought up, but I gather that you have a real fondness for the writing of the American Beats. I mention the Beats because I've learned that your more recent novel, War and War, was written in part in the apartment in New York of Allen Ginsberg.
Yes.
I just wondered what that
connection might be.
Yeah, that was a close friendship with Allen Ginsberg, and that was a very fantastic contact with Allen, because when I was first in America, that was almost the first time when I was in abroad. And to be in New York first, to be in New York in the flat of Allen Ginsberg, you know, I'm coming from Eastern Europe, but not from Budapest, but far, far from Budapest, from a small town. In this small town, we had, when I was a teenager, we had two books in a pocket. In the right pocket was an anthology of the Beat Generation. The title was Howl, by Allen Ginsberg. The other pocket was full with one novel, with, for us, wonderful novel by Jack Kerouac, On the Road. That was two books in my pocket, and suddenly, more than 10 years or 20 years later, I sat in a flat by a heroes of this time. That was absolute shocked for me. It shocked for me, because I remained the same boy from this small town, you know. And if you see me in this wonderful radio studio, I am absolutely the same boy from this small town. I've never changed.
Jim Caruso and I are talking to László Krasznahorkai about his novel Satan Tango, published by New Directions. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I'm talking with László Krasznahorkai about Satan Tango, first published 25 years ago in his native Hungarian, now newly translated by George Sertes. The novel takes place in an isolated hamlet in Eastern Europe. Its dozen remaining inhabitants are tempted away by a satanic figure who promises freedom but delivers betrayal. I had been talking to Sebald just months before his death, the remarkable writer born in Germany, taught in England, author of some of the most remarkable modern novels, and courageous enough to say that what was good in Germany left via the smokestacks or fled. But when we spoke, we were talking a bit about Gottfried Keller and what he called the German country novel. He said that it had been a terrific influence on him, that the small details of a real world celebrated in its particulars, its sensuous, natural particulars, was to him what a novel is. And I wondered, because if there is a country novel, Satan Tango is a country novel. The individual raindrops made on the many puddles that recur in this novel, the kinds of loneliness, it's the book of a thousand sorrows, it seems to me.
I leave from my birth under a cloud, and that's why I'm always in a shadow. I move sometimes right, but the cloud follows me. Sometimes I move left, and the cloud follows me. I'm leaving so in a shadow. And you know, the things are a little bit sad in a shadow. I dream about the light that I'm leaving in a shadow.
It's beautifully said. Can you escape?
No. There isn't escape. No. That's why I'm so funny. And that's why my books actually, not a tragic atmosphere, but sadness and funny atmosphere is absolute, actually two sides of one fact.
Well, my friend Jim Crusoe, who is here, his new book, which is named Parsifal, it's very funny, but it broke my heart. And his father was born in Hungary, and Jim lived in the household with a Hungarian father. I want to ask both of you, is there a Hungarian sensibility that defines this crazy sadness?
Yes, there was a wonderful Romanian philosopher, Emil Cioran.
Oh, yes.
And Cioran, whom I loved very much.
Me too.
Cioran said, there is three kinds of sadness in the world. The Russian, the Portuguese, and the Hungarian. And if I am Hungarian, I have to be sad. And I'm Hungarian, that's why I'm sad, after Cioran's advice.
That's lovely, because of course you're right, but what I would define it as, I know growing up, I went to every week practically, it seemed like someone was getting married, and they would have the Hungarian weddings and Hungarian dances, and I think about the csárdás. And I think that...
What's the csárdás?
The csárdás is a dance.
The csárdás,
it's
yes.
The dance. And the way it works, in fact, my uncle was a gypsy violinist. So the way it works is, just a little digression here, he immigrated from Hungary as a child, and then he spent something like 50 years in Cleveland, Ohio, and went back to visit Hungary, and they wanted to have him stay as a national treasure because his style was unchanged from 50 years ago. Yeah. He was like a fly in amber, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But simply put, the music is this sort of two-step between unbearably sad, and then it rouses itself to a kind of frenetic action, and then it goes back to being sad again.
Yeah,
and so I feel I have, you know, two choices of emotion.
Actually, this is simply but emotional.
But sometimes both ways.
Yes.
Yes.
Sometimes I think of the fact that perhaps the only treasure of Hungary is this kind of sadness. People go to the bar Friday night or Saturday night, and they feel much much better. But with this feeling, they are much and much more sad. This is perhaps a kind of Hungarian version of sadness. Worst, more worst, more happiness. The so-called, in Hungarian, to say "sírva vigadni," to be happy with
cheers.
Cheers. This is very, very typical. That was very typical in Hungary. Perhaps that was so impressed for Cioran too. This kind of sadness, that was a kind of happiness, actually. A very deep happiness. The sadness and happiness was absolute, almost the same. Or, again, two sides of the fact of a Hungarian soul.
You're happy because you were right to be sad.
Yes. And if you have success in this process, you were very, very sad and happy.
Yeah. I've been talking with László Krásnahorkai. I'm going to spell it because
I want you all to think very carefully about reading these books. Very profound work, beautiful work. And so the spelling is first name Laszlo, L-A-S-Z-L-O, second name Krasznahorkai, K-R-A-S-Z-N-A-H-O-R-K-I. The book, Satan Tango, people who might prefer the funnier but still more infuriating War and War. It is also published by New Direction, as is The Melancholy of Resistance. Those of you who heard me talking to Sais Notabom, Max Neumann, Krasznahorkai, and Neumann also did a collaboration. It's called Animal Inside, and it can be ordered through the University of Chicago Press. It's published by, in the lovely Kaye series, by Sylph Editions. Jim Crusoe's book you heard about last week, Parsifal from Tin House, has joined me in this conversation, and I want to thank both of you for joining me today. It's been illuminating and lovely to me to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Satan Tango at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Alan Howard. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Today's show was recorded at KQED in San Francisco with the wonderful help of engineer Howard Gelman at KQED. Thanks to Craig Erthine. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Jess Walter is our guest.
We are all bookworms. And we're just reading this, read that, read this, read this, read that, read this, read this, read that, read this, read that. I am a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.